Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Boy, look at those pictures.
Wow.
It's Walter Cronkite.
It's a little shadowy, but he said he expected that in the shadow of the lunar module.
Walter.
Armstrong is on the moon.
Yeah,
Neil Armstrong,
38-year-old
American, standing on the surface of the moon. On this July 20th, 1969.
That's one small step for man.
Pretty amazing.
Uncle Dean, who was Walter Cronkite?
I didn't understand.
No, one small step for man, but I didn't get the second phrase.
What? Walter?
One giant Walter, please.
Pay attention, Walter.
Our space headquarters.
If
the, was able to hear that, we'd like to know what it was.
Surface is fine and battery. I can kick it up loosely with my toe. It does adhere in fine layers, like powdered charcoal, to the sole and inside of my boot.
These grainy pictures that were being fed back live from the moon.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
There you go. All right, there you go.
Of my,
being beamed back, and what did I hear? One out of eight people in on the entire globe. We're watching that live.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, yep. Andy and I were too young to remember.
No, don't
young.
Go
yes.
there. No, Andy, I believe.
Andy,
I believe.
That was a year and a half.
Andy has this wonderful story about being a year and a half and playing with blocks on the floor. But he remembered it.
It was me, too.
Yeah. Different places, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we weren't playing together.
You were pushing
yeah.
around a shopping cart.
That would be ironic, though, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it,
if
though?
If we
huh?
were like little babies.
Like, hey, wait a minute. I remember you.
Wait a minute. Hey, someday, why don't you do sports on my show someday? I like what you're spelling out with those blocks.
Uh-huh. Baseball. All right, cool.
Movies.
Yes.
And our futures were set.
There you go. That was one small step for a man and one giant leap for radio.
What was it like back then, Uncle Schwani?
What was it like back then? Well,
I have to say, I've been so not amused in a bad way, but it's your enthusiasm and your excitement, and a lot of people share this same thing about the anniversary of the moon landing. But I have known you for 40 years? 30, 40?
35.
Okay. Don't push it.
I'm not. No, and I'm not going to.
Yeah. I've never seen you so excited. I've never heard you be so excited about anything. You are all jazzed up about this.
We got excited all over again when Dad and I were 3 years ago, went down to the Kennedy Space Center.
I got to say,
started all over.
I was there last year because.
And were you not excited?
We did the interviews for this
First Man,
the Ryan Gosling movie, First Man, from the Kennedy Space Center. It's pretty cool to be there.
Yes,
and
it
you get a different sense of the majesty of what it's like to put a vehicle like that up into the air and send it to the moon. It's rather amazing to be there with all the history and. Everything that's gone on there, it is pretty cool.
Now you know what else is on my list. Now I have to go to Houston to the Space Center there, where the Mission Control Center was for all of the Apollo missions, where Gene Kranz and all the guys worked to guide the ship to and from the moon. Yeah. That's been restored now. That's open
back
to
up
the
and
public
running again.
Yeah,
I did watch some of the coverage. I think it was on the Discovery Channel. C-SPAN was running the CBS coverage, this Walter Cronkite.
Oh, the wall-to-wall coverage of it?
Yeah. They ran it in its entirety on C-SPAN yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a little bit of it. But it I think it was the Discovery Channel that had kind of the history of the Apollo space mission, and we were reminded of the 1967 launch. I forget which Apollo mission it was, in which they were doing a test launch.
The Apollo 1.
And three American astronauts were killed in 18 seconds in a fire that took place in the space capsule.
Yeah, on the ground.
On the ground. Mm-hmm. Yeah, never even got up off the ground.
You know, Dean, that what's a thing that can we draw direct parallel with that is that was the same time that we were experiencing the big snow here in 1967.
Right.
Same couple of days.
Right. The whole thing's very interesting. But here's what I'm curious about. I mean, you know, a lot of us old timers, you know, have the memories of it all. And it's just weird that we remember something so clearly from 50 years ago, isn't it?
Yes.
Because when we were kids and our parents or grandparents would talk about something from 50 years ago, didn't it seem like ancient history?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like sure.
It would have been the equivalent of, say, you know, a grandparent talking about what it was like during World War One.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was like, what? You couldn't even fathom that life existed that
and
long
here
ago.
Here we are.
Yet here we are.
Here we are.
So, Andy,
yeah.
I mean, being a baby then, like, what does this whole thing mean to you?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was telling Shawnee off the air that, and my mom kind of confirms this because I know exactly where we were watching it. We were at my grandparents' house in Skokie, and that's what he was talking about, the building of the blocks. I was sitting in front of the TV. And I remember everybody that was there, and I was a year and a half old. I don't know how I remember
really?
That, but she confirmed that that's where we were. And, you know, I have a really vague memory of it. But, you know, the thing that I wonder about, because people of my generation, I think the biggest space thing that we remember vividly was the first space shuttle launch in 1981.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that compares. Obviously, this was the first time 50 years ago that anybody had stepped on the moon. But this was the first time the vehicle was able to be reused and right. relaunched into space.
Right. I think people remember that because of the majesty of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the space shuttle disaster
yeah.
that everybody remembers where you were. I was buying tires that day. I remember exactly where I was. I was in the store. I was buying tires. You know how you sit there and wait
yep.
while they put the tires on the car? We're sitting in, you know, they had a TV on in the background. And this footage came up, and, you know, the space shuttle launch was taking place. I was kind of paying attention to yeah. it. And then until clearly something had happened, something had gone wrong, and, like, everybody was around the TV set that was in this tire shop's waiting room, waiting around, to get their work done. But watching this historic moment, this tragic disaster in space history taking place, So what does the Apollo 11 mean to you? What is the landing? Is it of significance to you, Andy, in any way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you see it over and over again. And, you know, the words that Neil Armstrong uttered are infamous, of course, and you hear them all the time. It was just kind of cool because I think that, you know, you think back to, you know, 50 years in technology, how things have changed, obviously. But, you know, back then it was such a meaningful thing for everybody. It wasn't just, you know, people here in the United States, it was a worldwide phenomenon
right.
kind of a thing.
Right.
And you know, and there's obviously been movies made about it and things of that nature. But, you know, now I think nobody really has an excuse not to really know about it with the internet and everything like that. You can kind of go back and watch all that footage as well. But, you know, I think the significance for me was just, talking to my grandparents and talking to my parents about it later on. After I was actually really able to remember things and,
yeah.
and kind of appreciate what happened there.
Right, or talking to Shawnee.
Or talking to Shawnee, yeah.
Nice to have elders around the
country. You know, definitely, just to confirm these things for us.
Back in my day.
Uh-huh.
So, producer Ariel, who, Shawnee, I don't know if you ever met the producer of the show.
Certainly,
Ariel.
Yeah.
Because he told me he doesn't like you.
That's I've been told that by a number of producers.
He said that you scare him and that you're a terror behind the scenes, apparently, which is the reason that he's leaving the show next week. And we're losing another producer because of Shawnee.
Unbelievable.
I don't know how many we've gone
Thanks,
through.
Andy.
He keeps eating my lunch.
See?
And you put your name on it and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's why he goes for it. He's just like, Ariel brings good food. Ariel, what would your
I thought it said available.
Uh-huh. Ariel, what is your age again?
I'm 28.
He's 28 years old.
28.
Bright young man. Now, what does all this mean to you? This must sound to you like what I was saying a minute ago. When we were your age and people would talk about things that happened 50 years ago as being, you know, from the archaic age.
Well, I think for me, my thought is I have a hard time reconnecting with it because I can watch, you know, YouTube clips and the coverage on the news and I can see what's going on and it feels so ancient. But then when people talk about it, like hearing you three talk about it now, I'm a little bit envious of you all having an experience in which you were almost emotionally connected to something that dramatically shifted the globe. I don't have anything like that. I mean, I can remember the Columbia space shuttle disintegrating when it came back into the atmosphere, and that was devastating. But obviously, that's not exactly sort of a happy moment. And I can obviously remember 9/11.
Yeah.
So my only recollection are events that reshape the globe negatively. Yeah, I don't have an uplifting thing.
Yeah, I guess we haven't really had any positive thing like that.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. The whole thing is very interesting. Ariel pulled some very interesting facts about the Apollo 11 mission. Schwani, did you know that they had no bathroom on Apollo 11?
Yeah, I was aware of that. Did you also know there were no seats on the lunar module?
Well, but wait a minute. I'm not done with the bathroom part yet.
Okay.
They had to use bags.
Oh, yeah. That was the case for all of the space missions up until the space shuttle. They were using bags.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Just don't get those confused with Tang, you know?
That's just...
Yes, I knew that.
I did not know that.
I knew that.
Do you know what their first meal on the moon was?
The first meal?
Yep.
That I don't know.
Moon pies.
That would have been so awesome. They had snuck some moon pies up there. Bacon and coffee.
Huh.
Freeze-dried bacon.
I guess so.
I would imagine.
Yeah. The Apollo astronauts ate a lot of dehydrated beef and vegetables.
Mm-hmm. And drank a lot of Tang.
Uncle Schwani, what's Tang?
You know, I was this close to looking it up to see if I could get some. You know, to see if I could buy some.
Oh, you obviously don't remember what it tastes like then.
It was not good.
It was not pleasant.
What, Tang? You didn't like Tang?
It was terrible.
I liked it.
That was gross. Do they still sell it? Yes, they do. Yeah, you can still buy it. You want me to get you a case, Ronnie, on
yes,
eBay?
Yes, please do. Please do.
I'm pretty sure it's left over from 1969.
It's probably still good.
Well, if it's, you know, sure, if it's just the powder, why, you know, that'll work.
This was powder for those who are under 80 years old. Uh-huh. Don't remember this. Tang was a dehydrated orange drink. It was crystals, right?
Yeah.
Or orange crystals.
It was a little powder.
Yeah, you mixed it with water, and it became
an instant breakfast drink.
Horrendous tasting. That vaguely tasted like orange, but apparently, and the big deal was it's what the astronauts drink.
Right.
That the astronauts took it into space so they could eat it with dehydrated beef and vegetables and then get their sanitary bags out to relieve themselves. We've got lots of interesting facts and figures here about all of this. We'll talk a little bit more about this morning. We've got an abbreviated show with White Sox baseball coming up early, so we're off at 11:30 today. All the regular features, though, between now and then, Dean Richards Sunday Morning, WGN.
The far-flung forecast takes us out east to Merrick, New York. Merrick, New York.
Whereabouts is Merrick?
It's in Nassau County.
Whereabouts is Nassau County?
That's Long Island.
Long Island.
See, Andy knows.
I only know that because the Islanders play the Nassau County Coliseum.
County.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah, okay.
Merrick, New York. Population 22,097.
It's respectable.
The word means peaceful. So Merrick is a peaceful town.
Oh, okay.
And they have a high school.
Merrick High School?
No, it's not Merrick High School.
Peaceful High School?
It's Wellington C. Mepham High School. And there was a gentleman that went to that high school by the name of Tom Kelly. Does that name do anything to
you? Not one bit.
Tom Kelly? You don't know Tom? Well, Tom was known around town as a whiz kid, a real sharp young man.
That might explain why I wouldn't know him.
Who got all A's through school.
Not me.
You know, his, all of his friends' parents would say, Tom gets all A's. You need to study harder.
Why can't you be more like Tom?
Why can't you be more like Tom Kelly? Yeah. Tom Kelly graduated as valedictorian.
Yeah, I hate him already.
Wellington
Let's
Mepham
Andy, you
High
want to beat
School.
Him up? Let's
yeah,
beat
let's
him
go.
Up.
Well, I think your admiration for him will be, your opinion of him will be changed very quickly because Tom Kelly, whiz kid, brilliant person, got a job as an aerospace engineer, and he was the one.
I smell a NASA story
that
coming.
Designed the lunar module.
How about that?
For NASA, along with his colleagues at what was Grumman Company. Now I think it's North American Rockwell, but when he was with Grumman, they got the contract to design the LEM, the lunar module. So Tom Kelly was behind that. That unprecedented spacecraft to land Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin on the moon, and the LEM was also used in the additional Apollo flights up through Apollo 17.
Well, you know, we were talking about the, you know, everyone's talking about the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11, but I saw in some of the footage the disaster of Apollo 1. The fire that took place in the space capsule during a test launch. The capsule didn't even move. But they tested it out. There were some sparks inside the capsule, which was being fed 100% oxygen.
Right.
And that ignited instantly. And by the reports that I saw yesterday, the astronauts were killed in 18 seconds. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
What a horrible thing. But the point is that the improvements that were made, they had to go back and re-engineer everything. And I imagine this Tom Kelly guy was involved in this, where they had to go back and re-engineer everything. In order to make the capsules more safe, which ultimately led to us landing on the moon.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that makes the Apollo 1 disaster even more horrible is the hatch was not able to be opened from the inside.
It was locked from the outside.
They could not get out.
Right?
And they tried, but they couldn't do it.
Right.
And
that was one of the improvements that they made, one of the changes. Is that it had? Then they redesigned it. Then with a lever, both on the outside and the inside, much like you see on airplanes now, on the emergency exits, that can be open from the outside or the inside.
Right, right, exactly.
Probably so. Those flight attendants think it's so funny when I open the door, just to get a little fresh air while you're waiting.
Or when you're 30,000 feet in the air.
Yeah,
right? That's when you try it.
Well, you'll get some fresh air then, all right.
You certainly will. Well, Merrick, New York is having a heat wave because they're involved with the high heat. An excessive heat warning for Merrick today. 87 degrees right now. They're going up to 95.
Yeah, all the stuff that we have
sunny skies.
Has moved east.
That's right. It's their turn. So Merrick, New York, where Thomas J. Kelly went to high school, and he and his colleagues at Grumman designed the lunar module. There you have it.
Shawnee, we have
boys and girls.
We have an update on something we talked about in the last half hour, the delicious breakfast drink Tang that the astronauts used to drink.
Yeah.
People have been texting in asking who remembers was it the space sticks, space food sticks. Do you remember those?
Mm-mm. Space food
that they sold sticks. These they sold, you know, when we learned
kind of like freeze-dried food.
Well,
that was in vacuum pack.
I'm not 100% sure what it was. It wasn't, if I'm remembering it correctly, it was not freeze-dried, but it was vacuum packed, and allegedly what the astronauts ate, supposed to be nutritionally complete. They looked like Slim Jims.
Yeah.
But it was, I don't even know what it was, the material, but of course we had to try it. And we did eat it, and it was gross, and it made you give you a little more appreciation. But here's our big update that apparently, Shawnee, you still can buy Tang at Walmart and on Amazon.
Okay. All right. And not only that, somebody must like it, because the information I have here says that Tang is purchased in about 35 different countries around the world and is available in a variety of different flavors, depending on where it is. Yuck is not one of them.
Yuck, gross, disgusting.
Somebody must like it. 35 countries around the world.
Doesn't mean it's good.
Uh-huh.
It just means that they have nothing else to drink.
The serving size suggested is 2 tablespoons or 31 grams of powdered orange original flavored Tang
per
8 U.S. fluid ounces of water.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
A single suggested serving contains 29 grams of sugar, representing 94% of the product's dry weight.
Wow, you've done some research on this. Are you doing a 5-part series this
weekend? This is healthy. There's vitamin C in it.
How much
and
sugar?
Calcium.
How much sugar? It's all. I'll bet it's all sugar.
Well, there's a lot of sugar.
Yeah, enjoy your diabetes with it.
Somebody must like it.
Okay,
that's all I'm saying.
Hey,
35 countries around the world.
There's something for everyone. It's just not me. That's all. Somebody texted in and reminded me that space sticks were like the consistency of a Tootsie Roll. I do remember that.
Oh, okay.
It was like mushy and gross and.
Well, you've seen the old footage of the actual astronauts eating this stuff out of it, like a tube.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it was gross.
Like toothpaste.
At the Kennedy Space Center when I was there last year, you could buy dehydrated food. They sell it in the gift shops. So, of course, I bought some dehydrated ice cream and tried it. It's like taking a bite out of a styrofoam cooler. That's what it's like. That's exactly what it's like.
Eating the cooler. Not any type of real food that's in the cooler.
That vaguely tastes like ice cream. In fact, it's the reason I never became an astronaut. The food choices were too limited. Quick break, and we'll update you on what's going on with Pitchfork today that they shut down yesterday during the storm. We'll have the update on that coming up next, WGN.
We got work to do. We got work to do.
The great Mavis Staples, one of Chicago's very own, kicked off Pitchfork Music Festival Friday night here in Chicago. The lineup has been going strong up until last night around 5 o'clock when that storm came through Chicago. And rightfully so, they made the decision to shut down Pitchfork till the storm blew through, which was took about an hour and a half till things got back up and running again. Matthew Schnipper is the executive editor of Pitchfork. He's on the line with us right now. And Michael, good morning. Nice to have you on with us. Hello.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Very, very well. So that must have been a little scary time for you guys yesterday afternoon.
It certainly was. We were glad everybody was safe. We were glad that, I mean, the worst thing that happened was some people got wet, but some people got muddy. Could have been a lot worse. So we're really glad that we were able to reopen the festival. Bell and Sebastian was able to play. Isley Brothers were able to go on, just as we had hoped.
Yeah. So, Matthew, what have been some of the highlights for you for Pitchfork 2019 so far?
So I have to say, one of the first bands that played on Friday, I'm not sure it's called. Fair to call it a band, an ensemble, a group called Standing on the Corner performed, and they had about 30 people on stage. They're a jazz-ish crew, and they were split in outfits between dark blue if they were from New York and all white if they were from Chicago. So we had saxophones, trumpets, all kinds of strings, and they rehearsed for 2 days, made themselves a band, and they performed. That was great. So that was super, super, super fun to see. Really, like, unique and the kind of thing that's like a once-in-a-lifetime kind
of thing. Talk to me a little bit about Pitchfork itself, because, you know, people are so complimentary of the festival, which is at Union Park, and the music begins today again at 1 o'clock. But people talk about it, saying that it's stayed true to its roots. It has a very clear philosophy about the kind of music that you guys want to present. You know, hasn't changed like a lot of music festivals have, that people have become kind of disengaged with. Talk to me about your own philosophy for this festival.
Well, when we talk about the festival, and it's funny, someone asked me yesterday, well, when do you start planning it? It's like, well, we'll start planning it for next year, basically on Tuesday.
Right.
We look and see, you know, we haven't moved the festival to a bigger venue. We look and see, well, what's going to make diverse experience. What's going to make it so that there are, you know, pretty equal split between men and women? What's going to make it so there's so many different kinds of genres? You know, if you're a music fan, you want to experience a lot of different kinds of feelings, you know, and you want to feel like, oh, you know, sometimes you walk up and you see something that's totally beautiful. We just had a musician named Julia Holter perform. And she has, you know, she's performed in castles, literally. And so she has this Baroque feeling to her music. And, you know, you can watch that and, you know, that feels amazing. And then you can walk over 5 minutes later and see Pusha T perform an amazing hip hop set and go, oh, my God, I really know all the lyrics of that song and that song. You know, you really want to be able to feel a lot of different things. So we're not looking at genre, maybe we're looking at emotion.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's really noticeable. And, you know, people who love going to these festivals love your festival for that. I was going to ask you about, you know, this festival has grown and grown and grown in popularity through the years, yet you've stayed at Union Park. And I'm sure that, you know, it must have been tempting at some point to try to move the venue somewhere bigger. Maybe somewhere else in the United States, you know, just to spread it around the way they do Farm Aid or like Lollapalooza. It does. We're holding several different Lollapaloozas.
You know, I think that there's certainly one thing that, you know, one thing we're excited about. You know, we started a festival in the wintertime called Midwinter in Chicago. And it was inside at a museum, and it was a lot more avant-garde acts, and that festival did amazingly well. You know, we have a festival in Paris, which is really fun, but when people think about the Pitchfork Festival, they think about the festival in Union Park. And to be able to have a festival which is manageable, which you can walk from one side to the other in 5 minutes, it's important that the landscape of it kind of stays as it is.
Yeah.
I don't want that to change. I hope it doesn't.
Yeah, I find the intimacy of it also, you know, really great. Yet there are three stages: red stage, green stage, blue stage. What are some of the highlights for you today?
Oh man, today is an amazing day. I'm nervous because Charlie XCX and Snail Mail are performing with some overlap, so I'm a little bit stressed about how I'm going to run between the two of them. Our headliner is Robin, who is a Swedish superstar. She's an amazing pop singer. I cannot wait. I've actually never seen her perform. I am so excited, as is my wife, who cannot wait. That's going to be really fun. There is a great rock singer named Amen Dunes. He's playing today. That's going to be really cool. I really can't wait. Honestly, I'm excited to get over to the festival.
Yeah, and people can buy tickets at the gate, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, it's all at Union Park, basically at Ogden and Randolph is where you'll find it all. I'm glad you could
join.
Yeah, thank you. Matthew Schnipper is the executive editor for Pitchfork and puts on the big festival in Chicago every year. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Theater is on the air. I'm so excited to tell you about today's show, the segment, and this new show that's just come to Chicago. Teatro Zanzani is the name of it. It's sort of dinner theater. It's sort of so much more than dinner theater. It kind of reminds me of Cirque du Soleil a little bit, but it's different than that also. Probably best if I just let our guest tell us all about it. Who is Frank Frodante, who stars in the show. Frank, welcome. Nice to have you here with us today.
I appreciate it, Dean. Thank you.
So, I hate to describe a show by comparing it to another show, but just in the way of reference, so people kind of understand, it seems a little burlesque-like, seems a little cabaret-like. All of that while you eat dinner, that, you know, life doesn't get better than that, well, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you actually hit it on the head, because it really is this amalgamation. It's a combination of burlesque and circus. The best circ acts in the world are in the show, quite frankly, a few of them. And it's in the round. It's interactive. It's under a 100-year-old tent from Belgium. They actually flew the tent in. They brought the tent in and put it in onto the 14th floor, the Cambria Hotel.
This is amazing to me. Here we have a downtown hotel, which you think of as, you know, most hotels are, you know, they have their a confined space. But here on the 14th floor of this hotel, they were able to construct, isn't it like the 14th, 15th, and 16th floor?
It's three floors, and in part because it has to be high enough to accommodate trapeze acts and aerial acts. And it was discovered within the last year or so. Excuse me, that's something I ate.
That's not sure.
That was the radishes I had earlier.
Not sure what that is. Some sort of... That's a weather warning that we'll find out about in just a second.
There were drop ceilings in there, and it was gutted, Dean. And they found out that there was a Masonic temple there that was built in the 1920s, a Masonic temple theater.
How about that?
The balcony is still there. You can see where the proscenium stage was, but that was gutted. So when you go up into the Cambria Hotel, you go up to the 14th floor, you get out.
It just looks like a regular hotel.
You would never know.
You'd never know that you're about to go into a three-story tent.
It's insane.
Yeah.
And you go in there, and it's elegant. It's got chandeliers. It's got mirrors. That's the lobby. And there's a brand new bar. And then you go into the tent, and you go back into time, Dean. It's a 100-year-old tent with hand-carved wood and stained glass. There's a live band in there. It's in the round. And it's absolutely stunning. And that's the world. And then it's very interactive. So I'm the comic host. I play a character called the Caesar, who's this wild Latin lover character. And I've done it.
Yeah.
There's one in San Francisco years ago, in Seattle. And the
you're sort of the MC of the evening's events.
That's right.
I understand.
And my character is this kind of... he loves everyone. He loves the women, the men, dogs, cats. He's really not discriminating. He's unfiltered and wild and
so
fun.
So everyone should expect on making out with you at some point.
Well, you know, that's after the show.
But
it's really...
Come backstage, everyone.
Right.
And it sounds like it goes on stage.
Right. It's so much fun. And there's Lady Rizzo is the singing lead. And there's a foot juggling brother team, an act like I've never seen before. There's Ariel, you name it. It's and some great comedy. And some of these comics have actually played in Cirque du Soleil, and of course, all over the world. So for me, I'm a comedy aficionado since I was 9 years old when I saw a Marx Brothers movie.
Yeah.
And that changed my life. So for me, it's a fantasy to be working in a show which feels like a burlesque, like a vaudeville show.
Yeah.
And
for you as a performer, though, it must be so challenging that... There, no two shows are alike, I would think, because you're, I assume, interacting with the audience, the people who are below all of the acts that are going on and surrounding them, and you're interacting with the other performers, with the audience members. So you probably don't know what's going to happen when you take the stage every night.
Well, you're dead on. I mean, it's outrageous, and it's hard to explain how wild and chaotic it is. It's a lot of energy. And I don't know. Last night I brought a 91-year-old woman on stage. Her name was Ruth. Now, the great thing about the audience is we get young folk and we get folks who are up to 90.
And,
and it's a supper club feel, which is certainly part of the Chicago tradition. You feel like you're back in time. So you've got tables around. All the action happens within a 9-foot diameter. So acts are happening over your head, around you. Well, last night I picked a 91-year-old woman and declared her my first love. Her name was Ruth. And after she left, I said, of course, now I'm ruthless. Of course, you know jokes like that, you know. So there's a lot of punning. But no one expects my wild Latin character to bring up. I bring up men, women of all ages. And it's really, it's wildly fun. And, you know, one of my inspirations is Robin Williams, who I love, too. And I try to follow his lead in terms of just keeping it going and it's frenetic and manic, and it's also beautiful. It's romantic, the setting, because you're in this European tent.
Oh, it's got
to
be.
And there's music that plays from top to bottom with this band, and I think it's transporting.
It's Teatro Zinzani that is going to be here in Chicago until September 29th for now, with Frank, at least, anyway. We'll tell you more about it. I have some other questions. I mean, we haven't had dinner theater in Chicago in decades,
right?
I would think. I'm wondering what that's like for a performer while you're trying to perform and, you know, people are eating their salad. We'll find out about all of that when we come back. Frank Ferrante is Caesar in the show, the MC of it all. We'll tell you how to get tickets also when we come back. WGN.
On WGN Radio.
Segment, we're talking about Teatro Zinzani with Frank Ferrante, who stars in the show. It's the MC of it all. What does this mean, Teatro Zinzani?
It's a completely made-up name, actually.
Really?
Yes.
I was looking for some romantic...
Well, you know, I think Teatro, of course, means theater, and I think they want the word zany is in it. I think that's that's part of it. So Teatro Zinzani.
I have no idea if that's true, but let's go with that. Sounds like a good thing.
We thought it was catchy.
Before you came in, your name, I knew your name, and then we were talking during the break that you had done a one-man Groucho Marx show. And that's where I remember you from starring in this.
That's right.
That must be tremendous fun for you. You were chosen by Groucho Marx's son.
That's right. I was
be part of that.
That's right. I was 22 years old, and I was in college, and I put on a one-man show about Groucho Marx. I invited Groucho Marx's son, who was a playwright. Arthur Marx comes to the show and says, "If I ever do a show about my father, I'd like to use you." That's what he sounded like. He was. If today would have been his birthday, by the way. I loved Arthur. This is 30 years ago, 35 years ago now. And so, lo and behold, we go to our first performance is in Kansas City in a dinner theater of Groucho, A Life in Review. And I play Groucho Marx's life from age 15 to 85 in that show. And, you know, as we mentioned on the break, I was playing, you know, you're being upstaged by pumpkin fritters and all, you know, you name it.
The distraction,
yes, the tops of heads.
Dinner theater, yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so anyway, the producers of that theater raised $500,000, which was a lot of money back then, and we went to off Broadway at the Lucille Hotel, and that was great.
Yeah.
The show was a smash, but I loved Groucho from the time I was 9, and I've done an evening with Groucho everywhere, like every suburb of Chicago. I never played Chicago proper. I played Schaumburg, I've played Glen Ellen, I've played Arlington Heights 3 times, I've played Batavia, Barrington, you name it. But so that's part of the thrill of actually finally being here. But yeah, I've had a good run. I still tour with the one man version of my Groucho show.
We did on WGN TV for New Year's Eve this past New Year's Eve. We did a Marx Brothers marathon.
Oh, you're kidding!
On television, we did three Marx Brothers movies in a row to bring in the new year. And what are these? These movies are 80 years old, something like that now.
Yeah.
Hilariously funny. They're still hilariously funny. What is it about the Marx Brothers that's so timeless?
Well, people, I've asked that question. I think it's the irreverence, the fact that they're outsiders, that they pick on powerful people, politicians, doctors, lawyers, people that are in charge. It's hard, and you know, it's that age-old question, what makes something funny? It's hard to know. The fact that they were so... It's so well crafted, and they spent 25 years on the road, as I have, 35 years
honing their act, right?
Going from town to town, different communities. You're in the Midwest, you're in the South, you're in the East, they're in Canada. You try to figure out what makes audiences laugh. I think it had to do with, and then there's this kind of indescribable quality they have, that what makes someone brilliant what they do. I think few people, Groucho's a genius at what he did, and that's it. That's why long after we're gone, we're going to be watching The Day at the Races and Duck Soup.
Yeah.
And there's also a freedom to the Marx Brothers, and I'm going to tie it back to Teatro Zinzani. There's a wildness and a freedom and a ruleless quality to the show that I'm in, that's this Cirque show that happens to have fine dining. You don't know what's going to happen next, as you said. You don't know what we're going to do. It's scary. It's surprising. It's exhilarating.
Yeah.
And when I saw A Day at the Races when I was 9 years old, Dean, I became exhilarated. I was taught by nuns, and they scared me. And I wanted to treat, I think, Groucho the way he treated Margaret Dumont in those films, you know?
To treat the nuns that way?
Yeah. Your
knuckles would have not survived this.
I didn't. Yeah. They were wrapped mightily and often. But so that's what happened. And so I fell in love with that, with comedy and these kind of, these comedians and that type of comedy. And the character I play, the Chef Caesar, is, has, shares DNA with the comedians of that ilk, from the Jackie Gleasons to Jack Benny's to Phil Silvers to Bob Hope. It's wisecracky. And I tell you the truth, Dean, I feel like I'm supposed to be doing this role right now and be in this show in this city, because Chicago's got this great tradition of vaudeville and burlesque and supper clubs, and there's something quite right about this venue being here at this time, and everyone wants to laugh, and this is a big, it's a big laugh show, but I've had a great joy. I got to meet Groucho when I was a boy, and that was a thrill.
Oh my gosh, what was that like?
Well, it was everything you'd want it to be. My father took the day off of work for me to meet my hero. And I was 13 years old, and we drive to Los Angeles, downtown, where Groucho Marx, age 86, is going to promote a book. Now, Groucho could barely move at the time. He's had two strokes. He's not well, but we show up there at noon, doesn't show up until 3, and I can't wait to see my hero, my god. And he shows up, and he's got his trademark beret on, thick glasses, and he shuffles to the podium, and I follow Groucho. There's 1,000 people there, mostly young people, because we all loved his irreverence and his anti-establishment behavior. And he shuffles to the podium. I sit at Groucho Marx's feet, and he starts to mumble, "Can you hear me out there? Can you hear me out there?" None of us could hear him. No joke. And you can hear a pin drop. Yeah. And finally, someone asks Groucho the question. Groucho looks like he's going to keel over. "Groucho, are you making any new Marx Brothers movies?" And Groucho looks at this person and says, "No, I'm answering stupid questions." And the audience of 1,000 people explodes. And a woman goes, "Groucho, what do you dream about?" And he looks at the woman and says, "Not you." So it was so inappropriate, and his appropriate quality that, and his reference is what we love, because we only could have dreamed to be like Groucho. And again, that's kind of the quality of what we're going for at Teatro Zanzani.
What are some of the highlights for you during the show? I mean, you talk about some of the Cirque du Soleil-like acts that are going on while dinner is served. What are some of the highlights of the shows?
I have a funny routine that involves three male members of the audience in which they're doing a dance off to the music of Tom Jones.
Ooh.
That becomes a very funny comic highlight. I get to have a good time with that as the host. I think there are, and then you get surprised. You'll have this raucous, crazy act like I do. It's like a 15-minute act. And then you'll have this stunning aerial act. You know, a woman on a hoop, the most stunning female I've ever seen, is contorting on this hoop. And you're going, how is this possible? I think one of the best acts I've seen, I've done this show for 20 years on and off, there's a brother act, two guys, 21-year-old handsome guy and a 30-year-old handsome guy, and one of the brothers is juggling the other brother with his feet. Wow. 25 times he flips. And you're sitting there going, the human body is not capable of doing this.
Right?
And I see it every night, and I have my jaw is on the ground. And it is breathtaking, the experience. There's been so many great experiences. And, you know, sometimes the audience is, quite frankly, funnier, you know, than anything you can do on stage, as you know.
I have to think that that's a major part of the show, of the feedback that you get from the audience.
Yeah.
Now, how distracting is it that people are eating dinner while you're trying to perform?
It's not, you know, it's funny. It's a great question. But the show has been constructed where the food service becomes part of the show. So the wait staff, you've got wonderful waiters, wait staff. And, you know, they dance in the show.
It's
and they
present.
It's all theatricalized. And it's stylized. And so we take that into account, so I'm not competing with, you know, with someone's, the top of someone's head or someone, you know, the sound of chewing or clinking cutlery. So we figured that. And my character is Chef Caesar, as if I'm the chef.
So it all works. It's seamlessly into the show.
It's all integrated. It's a fun evening, really, that way. Well done.
It's going to be here. Well, Frank will be on the show until September the 29th here in Chicago. It's on the 14th floor of the Cumbria Hotel, which is 32 West Randolph Street in Chicago. You can get tickets at the 312-488-0900. You can go to BroadwayInChicago.com to get info. It's Teatro Zanzani. And thank you for coming in to tell us about it, Frank. A pleasure to meet you.
It's mutual. Thank you, Dean.
Give us your best Groucho. What's your favorite Groucho line for me?
"One morning, I shot an elephant in my pajamas. How we got in my pajamas, I don't know."
I love that.
Roger that. There. No. See,
Roger,
oh, easy.
Roger that, Sean. You know,
that's a firm.
Yeah. Want another Apollo 11 fun fact?
Certainly.
When the crew returned to Earth, you know, they were returning to the United States. They had to sign customs forms declaring
they were out of the country.
This is not fake. This is real. They had to sign customs forms declaring that they had brought moon rock and moon dust samples into the United States. You know how they don't even like you to bring fruit or vegetables,
right,
or plants?
Exactly.
They had to declare that on customs statements.
I didn't know that.
And Buzz Aldrin, after the whole thing was over, submitted travel expenditures for reimbursement for $33.31.
I didn't know that.
What did he buy while he was gone?
Yeah, what could you buy? What could you buy up there?
I don't know, but there were $33.31 of expenses that he had that he put in for reimbursement for the whole thing.
Did he specify what he bought?
I do not have that information, but I'm sure I'm curious now that we brought this up.
Oh, Andy's pregame show is now T-minus 20 minutes and 6 seconds.
Roger that, Shawnee. We'll take a quick break and talk to Andy Murray, brother of Bill, part of the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, who provided something very, very cool for us to give away tonight at Ravinia. That's all coming up next, WGN. Something strange, in a neighborhood. Who you gonna call? 11:18, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. Tonight at Ravinia, we're showing it on the big screen, the Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis film. Ghostbusters be shown all over the big screens, all over Ravinia. Chicago Symphony Orchestra will be playing the score live. I'll do a pre-show chat, some interesting facts and figures about the movie before it all starts. But what we're really excited about is a special poster that we're going to be giving away before the movie starts. A Ghostbusters poster that has been autographed by Bill Murray himself. The folks at Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant in Rosemont heard about this appearance that we were doing tonight, and they said, would you like a poster autographed by Bill to give away? We said, duh, yes. And they were nice enough to get it for us, and it's beautifully framed. And if you would like to win it, when you come to Ravinia tonight, stop by the WGN tent that we've got set up. It's right by the front gates. You'll sign up, and then we're going to have a random drawing and give it away before the music, before the movie starts tonight. On the line with us right now is Andy Murray. Andy, I would argue you do all the hard work at this restaurant, you know, while the others take all the glory.
I'm the one with the real job. Yeah, they said, yeah, well, you're not an actor, so yeah, you can go in the restaurant business. So, it's very nice stuff. So.
Andy is the cook, the chef, runs the restaurant.
Bottle washer,
all the important jobs that the other Murray brothers do not do because they've got other things going on. But first of all, we want to thank you guys for getting us this poster. It's beautiful.
No, I think it's a great idea. The movie and the CSO playing tonight, that's a real trip, boy.
Yeah, it's gonna
lucky you guys.
It's gonna be amazing. So we thank you very much. The first Caddyshack restaurant, the Murray Brothers Caddyshack, was actually in St. Augustine, Florida. Am I remembering that correctly?
It still is. Next year is our 20th anniversary.
And then you guys opened here in the Chicago area in Rosemont a few years ago.
Last April, so yeah. A year and 3 months ago.
Yeah, and it's quickly become one of the favorite restaurants in that area. Talk to us a little bit about the restaurant. The theme of the restaurant is movies. So I mean, you know, if people are a fan of movies, it's so much fun to go and look at all the memorabilia and posters and things that you've got there.
Yeah, it's a Caddyshack restaurant, but it does have all the posters from, you know, all the brothers, not just Billy, but Brian and Joel and Johnny. There's posters from weird, obscure movies that you've never heard of, but I didn't even know my brothers did. So yeah, it's a very comfortable, it's a pretty restaurant, and my food's pretty good.
If you do say so yourself.
If I say so myself, yeah.
Actually,
they're my recipe, so yeah, it is.
Yeah, I've been there a few times, and he's not kidding. The food is pretty good. How do you describe your cuisine there? If people have never been.
It's more comfort food than fine dining, but it's like in between there. It's food done well. That's what I like to say.
What would you say are some of your most popular items on the menu?
Well, we got these crazy golf balls, these potato golf balls. We call them gopher balls, and I sell a few thousand of them a week. Wow. They're mashed potato, fried mashed potato with cheese and bacon and some other things, and Brussels sprouts that people seem to, all the vegetarians go crazy for them.
Yeah.
But I got great crab cakes. I have a fabulous hamburger. But it's simple but done well.
Yeah, good stuff. What was it like growing up in this family with all these brothers? How do you find your place with all these bigger than life personalities?
I was one of the, they called the three little boys. There's nine kids in the family. And we ate dinner at the dinner table every night, before my father died. So there were 11 people. And if you could make my father laugh, you were doing really good because he had a very dry sense of humor. And so the dinner table was a lot of one-liners. And as a little kid, you just kind of ducked and tried to stay out of the way while the older brothers and sisters went at it. But it's funny, I've got a lot of friends and they're pretty close to their family, but we talk all the time, our family.
Yeah.
We're all going on a vacation next week together.
I guess not all that different really from a lot of Chicago families that, back in the day a lot of people had. I don't know if they quite had as many siblings as you do, but most everybody had pretty big families back then. And just to get some attention from the parents back then, I mean, you had to do whatever you had to do. Personalities were developed in family situations like that.
And very much so. My father died very young, and right after that, some of the older brothers, one went off to the Air Force, and one went off to the college, and one was in the convent. And so that gave the younger brothers a chance to step up and make their place in the family.
Yeah, with so many acting brothers in the family, though, was it especially theatrical? I mean, were you able to see in Bill and Brian and some of the others that there was something special about what they were doing?
I always knew Billy and Brian were special. I knew they were something different. They were different than anybody else I knew, and they can just look at me and make me laugh. But when you're with Billy or Brian and they're in a great mood, there's nobody else in the world you'd rather be with.
Yeah.
When they're in a bad mood, of course, you want to be as far away as possible.
I can't even imagine them being in a bad mood.
Trust me, they have their moments.
Yeah, turns out they're human after all, right?
You know what? They work very hard at staying human.
Yeah.
They really do.
Yeah. Well, if folks want to stop out and check out the restaurant, it's a really fun place. It's in the Crown Plaza Hotel in Rosemont. It's 9546 Balmoral Avenue, to be exact. You want more info, 847-443-3673. And Andy, again, we thank you very much for getting this poster for us, signed by Billy. And
Dean, our pleasure.
I know that somebody at Ravinia tonight is going to go home very happy taking this this beautiful souvenir home tonight.
It's a nice poster, and he's got a real nice signature. Actually,
he does have very nice penmanship, I must say.
He does have nice penmanship. He's more so than mine.
Or mine. So I'm right with you. Andy, thank you very much for taking a few minutes, and thanks again for everything. We appreciate it.
No problem, Dean. Thanks very much.
All right, buddy. There's Andy Murray, one of the many Murray brothers, part of the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant that is out in Rosemont, our Food Time segment. All right, that's going to wind it up for us today. We'll see you Monday through Friday with Steve Cochran. More on entertainment is on from 8 to 8:30, and of course on the WGN TV morning news. See you there tomorrow morning. And hopefully you'll be coming out to Ravinia tonight to see Ghostbusters on the big screens with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra playing the score live. Maybe you'll have a chance to win that Bill Murray autographed Ghostbusters poster that they were nice enough to give to us to give away. We've got the White Sox and Tampa Bay Rays coming up at 12:15. Andy Mazur with the pregame show.